Hi, friends. Welcome to the Wisdom with Walter podcast. I'm Claire, student and friend of renowned meditation teacher Walter Bellin. In these conversations, Walter and I talk about the most effective path to healing I have found, which is the combination of effortless meditation and Walter's inner growth practices. Let's get started. Today's topic is how our mindsets were formed. So in the last episode, we talked about the inner growth processes you've created to help people remove barriers so they can have the life that they want. Your inner growth processes work to free people from belief systems which hold them back and help them grow and develop as humans. Today, we're looking at where all of this starts, which is understanding your mindset and how it was formed. This requires first acknowledging that you have a mindset, which is operating mostly subconsciously. All of this helps us understand the question, how did I become the way that I am? To begin, what is a mindset?
Okay, so let's just take the word mindset itself and a metaphor. You think of water as fluid under normal circumstances, but under the special circumstances, when it gets cold enough, the water will take on a specific shape and solidifies into a set form. So our mind is also open and fluid before it's been programmed, before we've been conditioned. But when the conditioning has occurred, it then sets into like a brick, like a piece of frozen water. It now takes on a very specific shape and a very specific form. So that's a metaphor for what a mindset is, a whole frozen emotional way of seeing the world. Now, basically, mindsets consist of belief systems and kind of assumptions. I say assumptions because some of the belief systems feel so obvious to us that they're just assumptions. That's real. That's what reality is. So there are assumptions and belief systems that basically are like lenses that we're wearing, and through them, we see and understand ourselves. We see and understand other people. Different people, different types of people, specific people in our lives and so forth. And also in a larger sense that we see and understand the world, okay? The basic belief systems we have about what's real or unreal, or how the world is and so forth. All of these are, in a sense, colored lenses through which we're looking at reality. And they, of course, that therefore shape the way we see and respond to reality, okay? And we identify so closely with these belief systems that we believe that they are just reality. That's just the way things are. And we don't realize that most of our belief systems are completely arbitrary because they depend completely on what we experience in the process of growing up that froze our mental, emotional mindset, okay, the way we shape the world. So that's basically what it is. Once it's there, it becomes a semi-permanent set of lenses that we're wearing all the time that have specific colors through which we see everything.
So high level, why is it important that each of us understand how our mindsets were formed?
Understanding how they're formed shows you how arbitrary they are. And because they're arbitrary, it means you're not stuck with them forever. You have the capacity, the agency to be able to change them, but you can't do that unless you have some idea of what they are and how they got formed. The reason it's so important to understand what they are and how they got formed is that they shape the way in which you respond to everything in the world. First of all, they shape the way you think about things in the world. You think about any area of your life, you think about it in a certain way, and that way is shaped by what the belief systems are, the lenses that you're looking at the world. If the lens looks green, then you think about it as something green. The same thing with our emotions. Our mindsets determine how we react to things emotionally. If our mindset tells us we should be afraid of something and that something is there, we feel fear and then we're likely to have a reaction that results from that fear. Okay. And ultimately, of course, because they shape the way we think about things and they shape the emotional reactions we have to things, they therefore shape our behavior. They determine how we respond to the various things that come up in our life. Whether we respond effectively or ineffectively, whether we respond with finesse and nuance, or whether we respond in some gross and just reactive kind of way and so forth, all of that is determined by our basic mindsets. Once they're formed, They determine the way we think about things, the way we react emotionally to things, and thus the way we behave, how we behave in our daily life and in the world.
In all of your work in the last 50 years, do you think that most people are aware that they have a mindset?
That's a very good question. And I have to tell you, when I was a young man, when I was in high school and so forth, I think at that stage in history, very few people understood that. Whatever the lenses they were looking at the world through, that's the world. Had nothing to do with them. It's just the way things were. Now that has gradually changed over time because there's been so much popular work around psychology, around people going to therapy nowadays. There's so many books written about these kinds of subjects now. So I would say more common nowadays that people understand that they have these programmed in ways of seeing things, this mindset. But where it comes up short is most of them don't really know what it is or how it's actually operating in their life. Unless they've really worked on themselves, there's a chance that even though they know that they're programmed to see things in a certain way, it doesn't really help them much because they don't know how they're programmed to see things, how it happened, and what their mindset actually is. They're just aware that something is there. But they're not very clear about what it is. They're aware that they're probably wearing some lenses, but we're not sharing exactly what all those lenses are and how they got that color.
I think when I first came to you, I knew that I had some limitations in my belief systems, but it was your frameworks that helped me understand how my mindset was created and what sort of beliefs I hold as truth. To further explain this, can you walk through more about how our mindsets are formed?
In the process of growing up through infancy, childhood, and adolescence, we have all kinds of experiences with our parents, with peer groups, with authority figures, such as teachers and coaches. Some of these experiences are pleasant and we like them and we're comfortable with them. Some of them are emotionally neutral. They're not either good or bad. They're just experiences. But some of the important ones that shape the way we see the world and that shape our strengths as well as our weaknesses at the time when we have them. So they can range anywhere from just being uncomfortable to being deeply traumatic. And keeping in mind that something that might just be uncomfortable for an adult could be actually traumatic for a child. Now, when these things happen, we don't have any way in the process of growing up to see these things from a higher perspective. So when they happen to us, they immediately start to affect the way things that we believe about ourselves, things that we believe about other people or other types of people out in the world, or things that we believe about the world. For example, if I have a really uncomfortable experience sitting in class, a teacher asks a question and I raise my hand eager and the teacher shoots down my answer as all wrong, I only have to have that happen a couple of times and I'm going to realize it's dangerous to be the person who asks the first question. And then I'm also going to make some judgments about myself. I'm not very smart or I'm not very clever because I raise my hand and the teacher tells me I'm wrong and so forth. First of all, I start to make a decision about anyone I meet later on in life who in any way, passively or obviously reminds me of that teacher. So I'm going to be very careful when I'm around them and I'm not going to express myself because of the fear of judgment coming down. I'm going to feel I'm maybe not smart enough to say something that would make sense in that situation. That kind of freezes and becomes my way of seeing myself and a way of seeing certain types of other people, like the way my teacher was. This can happen with parents, with authority figures, with older siblings, and with peer groups, of course. Respond badly to us in a certain way. We make decisions about ourselves. Something's wrong with me. I don't really fit in with these people. So maybe there's something about me that's basically unlikable or unlovable or something like that. And once we've really done that, that becomes our reality, if you like, lenses that we see the world through. Now, this is the three things that are important in shaping that. The earlier in life the experiences occurred, the more powerfully formative they are. For example, if these are things that happen to me when I'm 2 or 3 years old, they're really powerful. There's an old saying that the Jesuits used to have, and it was something like this: give us your child until they're 7, and we'll give you the adult, meaning those things that happened to you before you're 7 years old have an enormously important impact on the way you see yourself and other people and the world. So that's one thing. The earlier in life these experiences occur, the more powerful experiences they are. The second point is, the more emotionally intense they are, the more formative they are. So if it causes a lot of fear or hurt or upset, then it's going to be much more formative. If it's really lovely, then that's going to be very formative too. And then if it happens a lot, if it reoccurs many times, then it will become more formative. So if some of these uncomfortable experiences occurred really early in life, in the first 7 years, they happened a lot and they were really emotional, they'd have a very major impact on our life. For example, in my case, I had a father who was very harsh and very authoritarian, and my temperament was such that I couldn't live within the rules that were laid down by him. And so I started operating outside of those rules and I became a rebel. And that started even before I was 7 years old. And then I get severely punished. And my way of reacting to the punishment would be to go out and do something even worse. But what I didn't realize is he was constantly telling me that I was a bad boy. And once I understood that I was a bad boy, then what do? Behave in ways that are considered bad. That's once that piece of ice is there and that the color on the lens is there, then you go ahead and behave according to that thing of being a bad boy. So I proved over and over again that I was a bad boy. And the other thing is that general way of seeing the world is really important too, because I began to see the world the way a rebel sees the world. So whatever was conventional, just the fact that it was conventional, it was wrong. It was bad. It was limiting. It was negative. I didn't see it in any light that could be positive. And the truth is, there are some conventional things that are perfectly good and perfectly normal, but I couldn't see it that way because once my mindset has formed, that was it. So this is how they get formed. And a lot of it happens before we're 7, but sometimes if we had really nurturing good experiences in the first 7 years, they're more formed in late childhood or adolescence. But by the time we're adults, we have a basic mindset that's pretty strongly formed. And unless we choose to do something about it and have the tools to do something about it, we're not likely to do anything about it. Indeed, we're not likely to even understand it or know exactly what it is. Even if we know we have a mindset, we're not likely to know what that mindset is and how it affects our life.
Awesome. So once this mindset is formed, what is its structure?
Okay. So we think of the mindset as having basically two fundamental components. Part of it is conscious, and there's a kind of fuzzy area that's semi-conscious between that, and then a large part of it operates subconsciously. But it consists of three things, and the first and most foundational is our sense of identity, our sense of who or what we are. So the way we view ourselves as positive or negative, for example, I saw myself as a bad boy. So the way we see ourselves, and partly also it's the judgment we put on ourselves by the way we see ourselves. We can see ourselves as ineffective or very effective. We can see ourselves as lovable or unlovable based on these experiences. And once we've formed our vision of ourselves, the way we see ourselves, that will include what's possible for us, what's impossible for us, what seems important to us, what doesn't seem important to us. All that will be part of our sense of identity, our sense of who or what we are. We say that's the foundation of our conditioned mindset, because that's the basis of it. Then the way we see other people out there, so this includes certain types of people and certain specific people in our life, that's related to how we see ourselves. So the example I used earlier is people who reminded me of that teacher, okay, I would continue to see in a certain negative way, but it was related to how I see myself as not being smart enough, as not being able to come up with good answers early, I should be charitable and not speak up when I'm around a person like that, all that kind of stuff. So the way I see other people, but then in a more general sense, the way I see the world. So having had that experience, I might decide if I've had a number of experiences like that, the world is a pretty dangerous place. A lot of bad things can happen. You need to be careful. You need to be very cautious. You need to live your life in a certain way. My decision actually was the opposite of that. So my response was to try to knock them all out, to go out there and so forth. But I had no choice about that. I thought it was free because I was a rebel. But in fact, in a sense, I was even less free than more conventional people were, because my rebellion gave me the disguise of being free, whereas in fact, I have no choice but to react that way because of my temperament and all the arbitrary structures that I picked up from my father and other authority figures that I thought were limiting me and holding me back and preventing me from having what I wanted. And so just knock them down, go through them.
So for this conditioned mindset, which is, as you said, made up of beliefs about ourselves, beliefs about other people, and then big picture beliefs about the world, what goes into creating that specifically?
Okay. There's two factors that go into creating this. One is the socialization process when we're growing up. The way we get socialized is by having people all around us telling us what's right, what we should believe, how we should think, what we should do, how we should behave. Now, some of this is explicit. Some of it is just tacit of what's expected of us. And it comes from authority figures and our parents and sometimes older siblings and from our peer groups, okay? There's basically three ways in which we can respond to this. If we like the influence, if it feels good to us, what we're being told, we'll just absorb it. And it becomes an arbitrary part of our mindset, which we don't question after that because we liked it. If it's uncomfortable, we have two options. One option is to resist it internally, but to conform externally because we don't want to get judged or we don't want to get punished or whatever it is. So we'll look like we're conforming with it, but internally we don't believe it and we resist it. And the third way in which we might respond to that is like I did, become a rebel. That is where you're resisting it internally and resisting it externally, that sort of thing. So the socialization process is one of the factors that goes into these comfortable and uncomfortable experiences that result in our mindset. The other is the degree to which we are able to realize or fulfill the needs that Abraham Maslow first described as a hierarchy of needs. There are certain needs that we have that are physical, so they're the survival needs. If we live in a first world country and we're not in poverty, that's no issue for us. Normally those needs are met. If you live in the country where you don't have that, or if you live in poverty, then that can be a serious factor in your life. Most of the people we work with have kind of middle class or upper middle class backgrounds. And so that wasn't a factor. The main factors were their security needs, the need to feel secure in the home, school, and workplace, their relationship or belongingness needs, the need to feel that they're liked and other people want them to be part of the group and other people want to be friends with them and all like, and our self-esteem needs, which is basically the need to feel that we have certain qualities and traits and skills that make us feel self-esteem, that makes us feel good about ourselves. Now, as we grow up, we have a variety of experiences that can cause us to feel insecure in certain circumstances. I always felt insecure when I was around male authority figures who were dominant, for example. Once we got into the school system, where you started having hierarchies, social hierarchies, I was always in what I would call the second tier. So I was never at the first level, and basically at the second level, which meant I could talk to someone at the first level, but I couldn't hang with them. So all of these things now, they're about self-esteem and belongingness. So I didn't feel I belonged to the best. And I thought, I knew I was good at sport, but I wasn't a brilliant star in sport. So there were then judgments about myself and where I fit into the self-esteem hierarchy based on the things that were valuable to people when I was in high school, which was fundamentally sports. That's what you had to be good at if you were a male and you were to have high self-esteem and be a part of that top tier. In other words, depending on where we fall in terms of getting those Maslow's hierarchy of needs met and how we responded to those attempts to socialize us, those were the basic factors that determine the uncomfortable and comfortable experiences and so forth that we had, or even traumatic, that then resulted in what we call our mindset.
Do you want to talk about unconditional love?
That is a factor that is really important. Children, when they're growing up, need to know that there's at least one caregiver around them who loves them unconditionally. So even, for example, if they've done something, quote, bad, unquote, they know the person still loves them. Even if the person is sanctioning them for doing something that's wrong, they know that person still loves them and still holds them in their heart. Now, interestingly, it doesn't necessarily have to be the parents, although that's the preferred one, that they would feel that from their parents. Okay. But it has to be someone. And in, for example, the people growing up in upper class on the East Coast of the United States in these old wealthy families, most commonly might be a nanny that was the one that was, that gave them that unconditional love. But that is a really important factor because ultimately it has to do with our ability to love ourselves. If we're never loved unconditionally, then we feel fundamentally and at bottom unlovable. And if we feel unlovable, then what will happen is we'll put out a certain vibe in the environment, the way we act, the way we interact with people and so forth, that they will treat us in kind and we will be less loved than other people are. So that issue of unconditional love is really foundational, along with the socialization process and Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
How does this relate to our strengths and limitations?
Very interesting thing to hear about some of our strengths, because the way they're often formed is either as a compensatory response or later in life as an obsessive response. If, for example, earlier in life we have an experience where we don't have very good social skills and we're not very good at winning friends, but we discover when we're 7, 8, 9 years old, we're really good with technical things, technology, what will often happen is to have some sense of being worthwhile, we'll just eschew social activities and really focus on technical things and get really good at our computer skills, or all those kind of technical skills, or science or mathematics or something like that. And that becomes a great strength as a compensation for not being able to have the thing that we originally wanted, which is to have lots of friends and to have groups that we could hang out with and so forth. So that's what we call the compensatory response, way of forming a strength. And the other way of forming a strength is if we're not good at something earlier in our life, but later in life we have those resources, then we get into a compensatory thing. Like, for example, because I was a rebel when I was in school, I was told that I was stupid by my teachers because I'd fail my classes all the time as part of my rebellion. So later when I went to university, I had that underlying programming that doubted my intellectual adequacy. I was intellectually insecure. So the way I compensated for that is by studying really hard and trying it all. I didn't get all A's, but mostly A's and so forth. So that became an obsessive response that later on, when I knew I had some intellectual resources that I didn't know I had when I was younger, I come to use those. So that's where the strengths come from. Now, where the limitations come from is where we have belief systems that say, that's not possible for you. You're not capable of that. You're not lovable. You're not likable. You're not good enough. You're not smart enough. You're not all these kind of things. And this then results in us developing a whole series of ways of thinking about things that hold us back, prevent us from having what we really want, ways of reacting emotionally that have bad effects for us. And finally, of course, we result in having patterns of behavior that don't work well, that is, that don't result in getting the things that we want for ourselves. So our behavior is actually working against what we actually want. And all of those come from these really uncomfortable experiences that we were never able to complete because we didn't have any perspective about them when we were children and growing up. So we get both strengths and limitations from these uncomfortable experiences. As we deprogram all this stuff and it goes away, the strengths remain, but the self-limitations, they disappear. They go away.
That's a great wrap up in terms of why this is important and what the opportunities are for identifying how your mindset was formed and what limiting self-beliefs you have. Thank you so much, Walter.
Okay, thank you.